Hello, and welcome back to Our Bodies, Our Stories.
A lot of the anti-choice discourse includes religious arguments, and that is why we thought it was important to disseminate this intersection between religion and reproductive rights.
We would first like to welcome Reverend Zoe Gary. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It is my honor to introduce my pastor, Reverend Zoe Gary. Zoe is an ordained minister and a graduate of Princeton Theological Seminary with a concentration in women, gender, and theology. Zoe creates a loving and welcoming ministry that is Christ-centered and affirming as the director of Nola Wesley in the Labyrinth Cafe in New Orleans. And Nola Wesley has personally been one of my favorite things about New Orleans and Tulane.
Thanks, Amy. I am very happy to be here. I was very excited that you asked me to come on. So I'm looking forward to this little chat.
Before I begin, I just want to say that the Labyrinth is such a cool place and such a cool environment. Like, I literally attended Pride Prom here a few years ago. And I think it's just really cool that this is a space that can hold space for everyone. Yeah. And moving on to the questions, as a pastor, do you have anything in your faith that inspires your pro-choice belief?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. As you said, you know, a lot of the discourse that you get on anti-abortion stances is rooted in religious ideologies and specifically Christianity. So I'm Presbyterian, and my identity is deeply rooted in the Reformation. The Reformation led Presbyterians to believe that the Bible is the highest authority for all Christians, as opposed to judgments or announcements from church councils or individual leaders like the Pope or bishops. That emphasis means that all Christians, not just clergy, have the right and the ability to read and study the Bible. It's from this tradition that I've created my own interpretation of the Bible, and I like to focus on Mary's fiat. So in the Gospel of Luke, when the angel Gabriel comes to Mary and announces that she's been chosen to carry the Christ child, Mary responds with fiat, or let it be. Mary is not a passive person in this. Mary has a voice. Mary has a decision. Mary has a choice. And I think that that is one of the most important moments of our faith, when a woman decides and gets to choose what her life is going to be, and that our test and that it is her testimony that we trust and that we build our faith on. So in thinking of what it looks like to be pro-choice in relationship to my faith, I believe that God is actively in relationship with us, and that we are not passive, and that this is just a clear moment when a woman literally gets to choose and have a voice on what happens to her body.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like one thing that a lot of people end up forgetting about. It's just like, that she did have a choice, and that's kind of pro-choice, like it's all-encompassing. So what are the typical reactions you get when you, as a reverend and as a religious person, say to someone that you are pro-choice?
I think for most people, they know me, and that it's just kind of an obvious stance. But I remember in New Orleans, when I was like going to a protest, you know, I'm always wearing my clerical collar, and I was walking up to the protest, and people were like looking at me kind of like, what is she doing here? Like, what is she about to do? And then like, I brought out my sign, and you know, it was like her body, her choice. And then everyone was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, we can trust you. But yeah, I think that as a woman who is a clergy, like baseline, I'm most likely progressive, you know, like there's very few roles that I can fit into, very few denominations that I fit into, you know, also just actively being and working in the queer community. That's just the niche that I occupy. Yeah, I feel like there's not much surprise in that way, just like in the body that I have as a female clergy.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, a lot of times you see people with a uterus not supporting abortion, and it's like, but this is your body that they're trying to take control over. Why are you supporting that?
Yeah. I was recently on a panel at Loyola, and it was a Catholic priest, a female rabbi, and me. And the female rabbi and myself were pro-choice, and the celibate man was the one who was not. It was just optically, it was funny, you know? And I know that he was really nervous to be on the panel and whatnot, but like that's the conversation, and that's like what we're having to deal with, especially with religious authorities, that the majority of the religious authority who are anti-abortion, it is not their body on the line, and it's not their body that has the consequences, or a cost.
So, on a panel like that, when you have the chance to address people that use religion as an argument for anti-choice, what would you say to them? What's your argument for abortions and for female reproductive autonomy?
I actually, there's this really wonderful quote by Dave Barnhart. He is a Methodist pastor, and he writes, "The unborn are a convenient group of people to advocate for. They never make demands of you. They are morally uncomplicated, unlike the incarcerated, addicted, or the chronically poor. They don't resent your condescension or complain that you are not politically correct. Unlike widows, they don't ask you to question patriarchy. Unlike orphans, they don't need money, education, or childcare. Unlike aliens, they don't bring all the racial, cultural, and religious baggage that you dislike. They allow you to feel good about yourself without any work at creating or maintaining relationships. And when they are born, you can forget about them because they cease to be unborn. You can love the unborn and advocate for them without substantially challenging your own wealth, power, or privilege, without reimagining social structures, apologizing, or making reparations to anyone. They are, in short, the perfect people to love if you want to claim you love Jesus, but actually dislike people who breathe."
Damn. I mean, that's so true. I think I might have heard that somewhere else before. I don't remember exactly, but it is perfectly convenient. And a lot of times people will also say, give them up for adoption so that someone who will love them can adopt them, as if there aren't like hundreds of thousands of kids
In
in the
the
foster
fall.
care system that could be adopted. And there's been like some viral interviews online of pro-choice advocates going up to pro-life protesters and saying like, okay, have you adopted any kids? And the answer is always no, but I would. But it
No, I think that that's like a really important part of the conversation, is like really challenging that pro-life stance, because if the money and the advocacy that we had for people who quote unquote are pro-life, then it would be so easy to be parents. It would be so easy to raise children here in the US. Like, I'm at the age where a lot of my friends are choosing not to have children because they can't financially do it. They don't have the emotional support, the financial support, the community there. I was talking to one of my friends who just had a baby a couple months ago, and she was saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but I don't have a village. And so, just like the heartbreak that happens from that, and we don't. There is no advocation for life. It is anti-abortion. It is about controlling women's bodies. And every research, any kind of study can point to that. And so I just think it's very delusional and very shallow to point to this at anything besides being anti-abortion.
I also think what you said about advocating for the unborn is easy is really interesting, because a lot of times people think that giving more rights to other people is taking away their own rights, but that's not the case. Just because someone else is equal, that doesn't mean you're any less.
Rights are not a pie.
Yeah,
Like, giving someone the right to choose for their own body and their own autonomy is not taking away something from you. And I feel like a lot of people fail to grasp that a lot of the time. And that was something that we sort of talked about in a previous episode, just sort of like reframing pro-life as like anti-choice or just anti-abortion and or like pro-control, honestly. Like, it doesn't feel like pro-life should mean like caring for those that are incarcerated and sick, hungry, oppressed. And it's not any of that.
Yeah, there's a difference between freedom and power, right? Like, power is finite. Like, you take power, you are given power, and that is often like, you know, one kind of energy, but freedom is not, and these rights are not. So yeah, I just think that entering power into this conversation and challenging its relationship to freedom, I think, is really important for truly understanding people's fear.
Yeah. And so moving on to the next question, how do you think the ban of abortions will affect Christian communities and either tear people apart or bring them together?
Yeah. I would say, I think that the Christian church has a history of producing a lot of trauma on bodies, on sexuality, on sex, and that trauma that is deeply entangled with shame is just going to heighten. I think it's going to hurt the church. I think it's going to underscore the reason why people don't feel safe in churches, which is absolutely fair. And I think people are going to die.
You know, and that's sort of just like a really sad truth a lot of the time, is that the ban of abortions is going to cause people to die. Like, I just talked about this with Dr. Johnson in the last episode, but in Texas, after the ban of abortions, it took a hospital 6 hours to see someone die from a self-induced abortion. Like, they were trying to self-induce, and then something went wrong, and then they went to the hospital, but they ended up dying while they were there, and it took 6 hours. And I also think forcing people to give birth is just going to cause more people to die from either trying to seek extra legal abortions or just...
Forcing someone to give birth is a war crime. Like, it's literally listed as a war crime in the International Court of Justice. So, yeah.
I think like religious places are places where people go to find peace and to like escape from the traumas of life. And if that is going to be a place where they can't be themselves, then it loses its purpose to a certain extent.
Absolutely. I mean, just like the very root of the place that we worship is called a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Like, it should be that. Like, it should be your safe place. And it's heartbreaking to think that we are creating places that are unsafe for people all the time. I was driving the other day and there was this bumper sticker and it said, love Jesus, can't stand his followers. You know, like, it's just, you know, some of the worst things about churches is that like they're filled with people, and like some people are, you know, addicted to power or are deeply insecure or want to have lived in shame themselves. And that's the only production that they know. It's like that phrase, hurt people, hurt people. Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right. We need to find ways to get back to the root of what these places are supposed to be. They're supposed to be peaceful. They're supposed to be sanctuary. They're supposed to be the place where you can be holistically and truly yourself, because that's how God sees and knows and loves you.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, growing up in like a Christian community that was sort of like hurt people, hurt people, it's sort of like the idea that like, no one helped me and I made it through, so I'm not going to help you. That happens a lot. And it never really made sense to me growing up, just because I was like, this is supposed to be a safe place, but sometimes it doesn't feel that safe.
I don't know if this visual will make sense, but you know, it's like that old trolley thing, the moral trolley, where there's like five people tied to the tracks and the trolley's going to go, but you can change the lane. and it won't kill anyone, but behind the trolley it's like killed five people. And it's like, well, if I change the tracks, it wouldn't be fair to all the people it's already murdered. And I was like, yeah. No, like, that's not how it works. Like, you save people, you help people. Yeah. Like, you don't continue these cycles of trauma. Yeah. You don't, like, we're supposed to be better.
Yeah.
Please.
The last question we have for you is on how you would advise someone that is pro-choice to talk to someone that is anti-choice about the religious aspects of abortion. Mm-hmm. Because, and to what extent do you think someone that is anti-choice would be willing to change their stance on it?
Yeah, don't talk to them. I'm serious. Don't waste your breath. Don't waste your energy on people who are anti-abortion. Talk to the people who don't know, yeah. who haven't made a decision, who aren't voting. Those are the people that are going to make the difference. The people who are anti-abortion have undergone years of propaganda, have undergone years of their own self-reflection and coming up with these ideas. And those are just going to be really painful conversations. And I think it's going to cost you more in that conversation, to be honest. So I just wouldn't do that. Yeah. I think that people listen to people they love. If you have someone who loves you, who's willing to talk to you and will truly value you in that conversation, go for it. Mm-hmm. Do it. Talk to them. Make them know that you are a face to the decisions that they're making. But do not ever put yourself at risk or put yourselves in the situations to people who are anti-abortion, because it's going to be painful and it's not worth it.
Yeah. But I honestly think that it's part of reality, just sort of that, like, a lot of people end up making up their minds, you know, like, especially older generations who have thought a certain way for X amount of years, it could be very hard to change their minds. And it could just end up causing you more pain or suffering or emotional distress or financial distress, depending on who they are to you. And so it's just protecting your own peace.
Yeah. And I guess, like, to be clear, like, I do think that you should let them know that there's a consequence to that, and that, like, it's extremely painful that someone you love or someone that you know is choosing to actively take away your rights, take away autonomy of your body. Like, there are real consequences and there's a real cost to their decision on you. And so be very transparent in that, but, like, do not engage.
Yeah, I think specifically when it comes to, like, random strangers that aren't going to affect your life, you have to draw the line between trying to change every person and also self-preservation, because when you do so much, it could really end up harming you and your own mental health in the end. So
yeah, I completely agree. All right, so do you have anything else that you just want to say, any sort of final words? Or
yeah, I guess I would say that you are not passive in your life. You're not passive in your faith, that you are an active person. And to remember that, you know, to engage in your faith, engage in your life, engage in politics as that main character self, you know, like, really just understand that things aren't just, like, going beyond us, that, like, we have a calling to engage in our life, engage in the church, and engage in our communities. And this is something that deeply affects our communities. And the least of these, people are being targeted, people on the margins are being targeted. And so we need to advocate for those. And I think that advocacy is central to any faith. Particularly mine. So do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I very much enjoyed this.
And to all of our listeners, make sure to subscribe to our podcast, and we shall see you next time.